listening to the Extensive Reading Podcast, where we take an intensive look at extensive reading. This is Jose Camino, and with me is...
Travis Past. A pleasure to be here, Jose.
Yeah, same here.
How you doing today?
Not bad.
Same for myself. Good. Feeling pretty good.
Okay. Not too many lessons today?
No. It's just three.
Yeah.
Just three. I got through them pretty smoothly. It was fun.
That's good.
My students were in a good mood today, so...
Let's see how they're on Friday.
True. Actually, Friday, they're usually pretty energetic, which is surprising to me, but...
That's good.
Anyway, today...
Yeah, today we have the second part of our interview with Dr. Antoinette Moses, author of many acclaimed graded readers.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the other day Jojo's Story. That's probably her most celebrated book. Or a graded reader, at least, because she's done proper, serious literature, theater. Other books like John Doe, Book Boy, Girl at the Window. And probably you've read this because, I mean, the audience should have read this.
We gave you a challenge last week. We gave you some homework. And I even did more of that homework. I read another one of her books.
Which one was that?
Apollo's Gold.
Yeah. That's not a starter. That's a level one or level two.
Two, maybe. I think it's a longer book. Yeah,
it's like Jojo's Story. Yeah,
So we'll continue with that. But actually, before we get to the interview, we do have a couple of housekeeping issues. We can call it that. We have a few comments and a few suggestions about putting up a feed, an RSS feed. And also getting our podcast on the iTunes podcast app.
Yeah.
And I can relate to that. When I listen to podcasts, I use that app. So we're working on it.
Yeah, it's incredible. We haven't thought of that before. But yeah, it's going to be done soon.
Yeah. So we appreciate your comments, your feedback. And we're listening.
Yeah. Send some more comments and more feedback.
Yeah, please.
And
also...
Yeah, we have some good news. We are, there's a link to the podcast on the Extensive Reading Foundation's website. From last week. And yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
It's a real feeling of validation.
Yeah, actually, the person who did that wrote, "You're famous now," in his email.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks for that.
It's gone to my head already, the fame, you know.
You're becoming a bit of a diva? Diva?
A diva.
Yeah.
A diva. No. Anyway, back to the interview. Let's get to business today.
Yeah, we have a really interesting second part of the interview where Dr. Professor Moses, she tells us about advice for potential authors of graded readers.
Mm.
She talks about how important it is to develop your characters, to listen to your characters.
Mm.
And to get into your student skin so that you get an idea of what they like and properly give them what they want.
Yeah. So we look forward to sharing it with you.
Yeah, no more spoilers. Okay, so I hope you like the second part of the interview. Yeah, I would also like to ask you about working with the illustrator and what's that like?
The illustrators come afterwards. My publishers, Cambridge University Press, often give me samples from different illustrators, and sometimes I suggest illustrators, and then they do the illustrations, and I say, "Wow, fantastic, thank you."
But don't you have to be very specific about the illustrations while writing?
No. I just write the story, they give them to an illustrator afterwards, and the illustrator loves the book and does the illustrations.
Okay, I was going to ask, because in Let Me Out, there's a scheme of the other, there's a chart, there's the apartment, we can see the apartments, the different rooms. And I was curious as to why that was there, and yeah, so
well, he's got it here.
It's right, yes, here.
That was the illustrator making it simpler for the reader to understand. That's simply what happens when you work with a really good illustrator. They take what you've done and make it better.
Okay. So now that you mentioned that, so it would be possible to read the book without the illustrations, and would yes. would it still work the way it works?
You tell me.
Yeah, no, I mean, these students should tell us. But
I think so. I think, I mean, depending on level, and if the student is, hopefully they're understanding all of the vocabulary and they would be able to.
Oh, well, I see it as a tool. And if I were to write a graded reader for low level students with very limited vocabulary and grammar, I would certainly rely on images the way I do in class.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So it was very surprising when you said that the illustrations come afterwards.
It doesn't mean I don't see them, but I give complete freedom to the illustrator. I think in some, you know, I will come up with suggestions for illustrations, but if you have a really good illustrator, actually it's collaborative. They can make it better. They have their own ideas from reading the book, and I do love working in collaboration with people rather than imposing my views.
Mm-hmm. I think they do a very good work with your books. I like Nolan.
Oh, the character in Let Me Out, a robot out. He's referring to.
Yeah, he's horrible.
We won't give any spoilers. But you did horrible. Mention something about a dying dog earlier in the podcast. So,
well, I think you have to warn teachers about that. That yes, some students might get upset.
Yeah. Do you choose the level of the graded reader before writing it, or do you start writing and then decide which level it's going to be?
I choose the level. I mean, well, in conjunction with Philip Prowse, I come up with an idea and say which level it will be, and I put an outline and send it to the publisher and to the series editor, which was Philip Prowse, and they say, yes, I think that works, and that works at that level. So I'm working for a specific level. I've never changed the level halfway through. It's always been I'm going to do a beginner book, I'm going to do level 2, I'm going to do level 5. I'm working for a new publisher. For us, it's a Brazilian publisher, and I'm working with, again, someone who doesn't teach. I'm working with a horror writer, a wonderful writer called Alexander Gordon Smith, who has written the Furnace series and some other fantastic books, and we are working. We write alternative chapters, alternating, not alternative. You need all of them. We alternate chapters. Alternating chapters. And it's for the Brazilian publisher, FTD. And we've just done a level 2, and we're working on a level 5. And I think this is going to be great fun. And it's very enjoyable to be doing this again. I haven't done any writing, except writing plays. I haven't done any readers for some years. So it's quite nice to be back writing readers again.
Can I ask you about the particular books? So you have... Let Me Out is a starter. How did you decide that it was going to be a starter and not a level 1 or level 2?
I think that's what they needed. I think I think the publishers at that moment had a gap in the series and just wanted a new starter book. So it was just like, do you want to do a starter book, Antoinette? It was like, yeah, okay. And not everyone likes writing the starter books because they're the hardest to write. They're the shortest. But they are much harder to write because you have so little grammar, so few words.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of online tools to write at different levels?
I don't know anything about those, I'm afraid. I've been away from writing readers now for well over 10 years, so I'm afraid I'm not the person to answer that question. I think that they may work for some people. But for me, it's finding the story in my head, finding the characters, listening to the characters. The characters become people. And I don't think you can do that interactively with a screen. This is something you have to do inside your head. You have to get to know your character and listen to them and find out what they're doing, so that when the reader gets to know them, they believe in them. The reader has to feel that this is me. I can imagine myself in this situation. And I think that my books do well because the characters are believable, that people do recognize their voices. And voice is extremely important, making sure that voices are individual and belong to them. And that is something that the writer does in their own head.
You said you don't do that in front of the screen. You have to feel the characters while you're not writing.
Yeah, I walk up and down. I go swimming. Swimming is very good conversations with characters. I swim up and down and listen to my characters in my head, yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm not a writer, but I did a lot of swimming in my youth, and you have a lot of time to think while swimming. I can relate with that fully.
Partly this is an excuse for me to go off to a Greek island and say I'm working.
Did I ask this question?
No, we did not talk about headwords at all.
Okay, sorry.
Please don't talk about headwords. Those are chosen by the editors. I just have my vocabulary list and I obey it. That's some God does that. The people who are in charge of the series, and these are the teachers. They know how the head words have developed. They do all the work. I don't do any of that. They give me the list. I have one here, which I'm looking at just right now. And I just take that is what I have to work with. That is, in a sense, if I'm a sculptor, that is my clay. I've got those words, and that's what I have to play with.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us some practical advice for people who are considering becoming writers of graded readers?
I'd be delighted to. The first thing is to read a lot. Read not just readers, but read the kind of things that students read and that you know they like, or the kind of movies they like. What are the kind of stories that interest them? And teachers probably know what kind of stories interest them. I mean, the stories that they read in comic books. And so, and the conversations they have, that's where teachers have an advantage if they are teachers, that they know what interests their students. So you then think about, okay, the standard thing is you have a character and a situation, and then you make it really difficult for them. You put them under pressure, we say. You make things hard, and then you make it even harder, and then at the end you resolve it. At the beginning, you need a question. What is it they want, and what's stopping them getting it? It's in theatre, we call it the active dramatic question. And it works too in stories. What is it your character wants, and why can't they get it? Beginning of Book Boy, it's why is he lonely? Why is he on his own? Why is it that he can't go out of the door? And in a sense, it's meeting Ella, I think I remember her name is.
That's Maybe Ella, yeah.
Yes, and he discovers that friendship again, and he discovers himself. So there's a journey. There's always a journey. If there isn't a journey, then it's not working. There has to be progression. There has to be something that changes. And people have, I think, should, even in quite short books, there should be a moment of change. That's why, they seem really simple, but there's underneath the structure, there's quite a lot of complexity. And I think you need to know what your story is going to be before you get started with a reader. I think you can't just start and see where it goes. In a long novel, you can do that. You can begin and think, where am I going? But like, it's much closer to writing a movie script. You need a structure. You need to know, where is this going? What's the story? Whose story is it? And then you can, I think that you should spend, before you start writing, you begin with a story, make sure it works. then you spend all your time on character development. Write lots about the character you won't use. Really get to know the character and listen to the character, and then you'll have a great story.
Hmm. So when you say you write about the character, it's not, that's not going to go in the book, right? Just write them for yourself.
Lots of stuff like that. Yeah, you can do diary entries. You can get them writing letters. Do all the kind of, and this is what you can do in class, of course, when you get your students to write, as what I do in teaching creative writing. You get your students to do lots and lots of character work. What is it that the character does when they're by themselves? So, and then, of course, when you start to listen to them and they have conversations, you know what they you've got a past to draw on. Oh, I remember that day, you know, when we went for the picnic, your character says, and that's because you've worked out that they had a picnic on that day. They've got a past. And if you believe in your character, it's interesting, I've talked over the years to many, many writers, not reader writers, but writers of fiction. And we all say the same. We don't call them characters. We call them people. They're people in our novels. And we believe in them. Jojo has never been a character. He's a boy. And the moment you stop calling them characters and you start thinking of them as people and they come to life, then hopefully they'll come to life for your reader as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think of just my favorite novels that I've read are, they take place in a world, right? It's not just on a page. You can kind of get a glimpse of the world that these characters are in, these people are in, excuse me. And they have a history that's not on the page, but you feel it behind the words.
Like Hunger Games. That's why young people love the Hunger Games. Yeah. It works brilliantly like that.
Same with the Game of Thrones, the Song of Fire and Ice. I don't know if you've read that. Oh, it's just... Yeah. It seems like there's such a history there that just kind of eventually comes out through a story. And I think, I mean, going back to Book Boy, I mean, obviously you have a character who you were introduced who has a troubled history. You know, maybe his parents have passed away and something has happened there and he's hurting. And you feel that. So. Mm.
Yes, and you do it with very little. You have to, to make the reader feel that with very little, you need to really feel it so it comes through in everything they say and what they do. Make sure, find not just what they say, but what they do. Watch what they do when they're moving around. It's what you do on stage as well. It's actions.
Any last questions that we have?
Yeah, you mentioned theater. I mean, maybe this doesn't go on the podcast either, but what are some of your...
I'm happy to go on Nattering.
I love One for the Road by Pinter.
How did I knew you were going to say Pinter?
Well... I don't know. I just happened to study a little bit of theater, and I read that it's a short play, and it's profound. I mean, it's really, it makes an impression on you and the way your books do. And
he's my hero. I did meet him. He is absolutely wonderful. I think if any of you are teaching older students and
your Travis is on that.
And want to think about quite simple language, but really important talk, and that's Mountain Language. Have you read that?
Mountain Language, no.
This is a very short play by Pinter. He wrote it after coming back from Turkey, where he'd met Kurds, and about how the Kurdish language was forbidden. And he was very angry. He wrote it, I think, almost in a weekend. And it doesn't mention any specific place, but it's about not being able to use your own language. And it's one of the most powerful plays I know. He was a genius at using very simple language. He used a lot of phatic language, the kind of things that we say, hello, how are you, nice day, you know, all of that kind of everyday stuff, and makes it, pushes it into the surreal. His last book, Celebration, says, lovely, oh, lovely, yes, wasn't it lovely, yes, it was lovely, and does all of that. And I think that using extracts of that with students and talking about how you can make up plays using just a few words is actually something that works very well in a class. One of my earliest memories of a French class was a young student who came and showed one class about how you could have a whole day using one expression, ça va. And, you know, it's just like, you know, va bien. It's one of those things that you, it's hi, you know, or in Greece you'd say andaxi. You can just go around with a very few words. And that's why one of the things I do think is very interesting is creative writing as well as creative reading. And I love it when students take readers and take them further. How would you turn that into a play? What would you do next? And seeing how they can make something or similar. If you were doing something on this, how would you do it? Because, and sometimes you start with some writing about a subject and say, well, this is an author who did the same thing. Read it and see if they're any better than, you know, maybe yours was better. It's empowering, again, empowering students. But creative writing is an incredibly useful way of getting into reading.
I have another question for the writer, not necessarily for the author of graded readers, but for the writer in general. And is, how do you make your choices? One of the things that puts me off from writing is that it would be so difficult, because at every two words you have to make a choice. You go in this direction or this other direction.
If you're that kind of writer, you write it fast. You just write. And then all writing's in the rewriting, is it? Mm-hmm. So what you do is you write it, and then you do it out loud. You do it out loud in front of people, and you know if it works by their reactions, by their silence, how it works. And you're also listening. When you do it on the page, it doesn't always work. So reading out loud, you know which words work and which words don't work. And when they work, you leave them, and then you have to step back. But I used to be prevented from continuing because I kept rewriting the first sentence so many times. And then I just thought, stop that. You just have to write 1,000 words every day and get on with it. And then you do it at an editing stage, and then you work on it. Doesn't mean you don't rewrite lots of times. I'm working on, not a reader, but I'm working on a novel. And I wrote the first chapter first in the first person, in the past tense, and then I rewrote it in the present tense, and then I rewrote it in third person, and now I'm going back to first person, present tense. But every stage, it's changed a bit and got stronger and tighter, and I've cut things, and I think it's now there, and I'll step back and leave it.
Yeah, wouldn't you think it? How do you think it's there? It's tight enough, because you said it's getting tighter and tighter.
I get out to people, and there's nothing that makes me go, ooh.
Okay. So don't you ever have the thought that maybe you could take, say, Let Me Out, which is right in front of me here. You say, oh, maybe I should have done this differently.
I don't reread them that much. I read them. I did. I haven't read them for years. I read them when they first came out, and I used to go around and read them out loud. And they worked out loud. I also worked on them when they were being recorded, because all of them were recorded.
Yes.
And there were moments then that I did want to make one or two changes, or if I pick up a mistake, I'd say, in a reprint, pick this up. But because I work very hard on them, there were very few, and most cases I didn't want to change anything. But also because I had very good editors, and the editors picked up the mistakes.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
There you have it. Thank you. That was wonderful.
I think I'm done.
Yeah, that was, thank you, Antoinette. That was very informative. A new opinion that we had, or new view on extensive reading that we haven't heard yet on our program. So that was fantastic.
It was a pleasure. It was really nice to meet you both.
Well, thanks for that.
And before we let you go, is there anything you would like to share? Anything upcoming? We know you're working on two graded readers, you said, for a Brazilian publishing company. But even outside of graded readers, if there's anything you want our listeners to know about, any work that you're doing?
Well, I am working on my first big novel for young people. So watch this space, as they say. We'll see what happens. And yes, you can follow me on Twitter.
Yeah. What is your Twitter handle again?
Just go to Antoinette Moses and it comes up. It's got some numbers in it. So.
Okay.
I remember what they are. So it's Antoinette Moses and you'll find me. And it's, it's always nice to be part of a reading community. And this podcast has been part of that, and it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for that.
Thank you for that, yeah.
So thanks, Dr. Moses.
Thank you again for the interview. That was wonderful. I really enjoyed talking with her.
Yeah, same here. I'm actually considering having you write your first graded reader.
Me? Well, thank you for volunteering me for that. You know, I've learned a lot. I really got to meet some people.
Yeah.
if you catch my meaning there, you know.
Well, for starters, you could read a couple of links that we're going to post with this episode.
Yeah.
And
what are those?
Well, the first one is called, it's an article called Writing a Graded Reader by Rob Waring. And here he discusses not only how to write it, but he gives a very good introduction to graded readers, what they are, what they're meant to do, who they are written for, etc. And he gives advice that can complement the advice that Antoinette Moses gave us in the interview. And we'll leave a link with the... with a podcast, and there's a second one.
What's that?
And this one is it's complimentary because Professor or Dr. Moses told us about her experience as a writer who turns to graded readers, mm-hmm. to writing graded readers. But here we have a blog post by a teacher who decided to write and see if she could publish a graded reader. That's Nicola Prentice, and the graded reader she writes about is The Tomorrow Mirror. Which turned out to be a really good book, and which also won an Language Learner Literature Award.
Wow, fantastic.
And then this post is really, really funny, I think. Even if you're not interested in writing a graded reader, it's a good read. It's interesting. So that's your homework.
All right. Yeah, and I hope we've been able to motivate some of you listeners. If anybody feels led to get creative and to write a graded reader, we have some reading for you to do, and then we encourage you to get after it, right?
You could write about podcasters, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. You could write a graded reader about a podcast that really encouraged you to
write a graded reader.
Yikes. Sorry for that.
No, they probably stopped listening and they're never coming back.
Anyway.
Anyway, what do we have for next week, Travis?
Yeah, well, next week, this is actually thanks to Dr. Moses. She set us up with her editor, Nick Bullard, and he's also an editor and an author and an adapter. He's adapted books, and this is all for Oxford, right? Oxford Bookworms?
Yeah, the Oxford Bookworms collection. Well, now he doesn't... he's working with a Brazilian publisher now, with Antoinette Moses, I believe.
Oh, okay.
This is in the past. He wrote or he adapted books like The Adventures of Tom Sawyer for the Oxford Bookworms collection, and some more for the same collection.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And especially after talking with Antoinette, I'm interested in hearing from the editor's perspective, mm-hmm. the things that they look for. If he could give us more of like a behind the scenes view on graded readers and the whole process of putting that together. So
Yeah, it's interesting because Antoinette was saying that it was a great pleasure to work with the editors. It would be nice to see if the editors think the same thing about working with
the editors. Yeah, a few times she said, oh, wonderful editors or something, having a fantastic editor. And well, I'm sure that that goes both ways. Your job as an editor has to be more rewarding and simpler when you have a real inspired author. So,
yeah, probably they make things easier. Yeah, good authors, I guess. Yep. And yeah, I think that does it for.
Yeah, so if you have any questions or comments, especially regarding editing graded readers for our next interview, we'd love to hear them. So you can email us or you can leave a comment. I do recommend you check out our webpage. That is?
Yeah, erpodcast.wordpress.com.
Yeah, and there you can leave comments. And if you have any, I don't know, you want to email us, we are at exrpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
So, yeah. Got it this time.
Good. So, yeah,
see you. Until then.
Yeah, see you all next week.
Yeah.
And, yes. Happy reading.
Happy reading.